Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to Horror Versus Reality. I'm Anastasia. Morgan's with me as always. How you doing, Mo?
I'm here.
Right before we started recording, we were talking about how that song where you hit the note really high is Maya Rudolph's mother singing.
La 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 la.
Sorry, okay.
that's probably enough.
That's enough.
I mean, she has passed, but don't sue us, Maya Rudolph.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't enough. It was.
Yeah. Well, you know, just
an artistic reconstruction of it.
True. That's true. That's true. But yeah, so we were just talking about that. But hi, guys. So today we are doing Terry Pollan versus I Can't Sleep, which is, yes?
I looked it up on how to pronounce it.
Yes.
It's Terry Pollan.
Terry Pollan.
Yeah. Pollan.
So, yeah, I took 4 years of French, actually. And I feel like I'm going to pronounce most of this stuff pretty right. But I'm human. Either one of us might pronounce a couple of things wrong.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Will you say that again?
Terry Pollan.
Pollan. Okay, so Pollan. I'm just going to say Terry the way it, like, you know, Anglophile it.
Yeah, it sounds like Terry.
Well, yeah, Terry. And that's, I'm not going to do the French accent every time is what I'm getting at.
I will. I'll be like, Thierry Pollan.
That sounded pretty good.
It was good? Oh, yay.
Well, I mean, a little exaggerated, but the pronunciation was good.
Good. I never took French and I have no idea. I just know you don't pronounce the last letter.
Most of the time. Yeah. There's definitely exceptions to the rule, like any language. Yeah, so Terry Pollan. Yeah, that's what we're doing today. And his accomplice, because he had a lover accomplice. It's not just him. So they're kind of known as the Granny Killers, also the Monster of Montmartre. I think that didn't quite pronounce all the way, but yeah. So we're going to talk about that today. Morgan, how'd you feel about this movie?
I wanted it to end. It just wouldn't end. It just kept dragging on, and I thought character development was very poor.
So this is definitely what I would call an art film.
Yeah.
It has a lot of long gazes at characters and, like, parts that I feel like some of the long gazing scenes that just kind of meander, some of them I feel like are kind of important, but others I feel like they definitely could have cut short and gotten the same point across. But I don't know, man. Denise is an auteur, and this was, you know, her creative choice. It definitely runs long, in my opinion. I didn't hate it. I wish it was shorter. But I watch shit like this all the time. So, when I'm not watching horror movies, I'm watching what some might call pretentious foreign films. So that's like my dichotomy of my watching. Like I watch normal things too. Like Mark and I watched The Mummy the other day, but if it's just me watching something, it's either going to be horror or something incredibly hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah, this one was just dragged on and on, and I was like, "What? Who is this chick, and why does she matter? She has literally barely any speaking parts. She just stares at people, and they're like, you're so pretty, and that's it."
Yeah, they so as a plot device, there's a character that I don't think has anything to do with the actual story. And it kind of revolves around her, sort of, to tell their story. Terry Poulon and his lover. And, you know, just all the murders. It's a weird backdrop, honestly. You also don't know that he's the killer until, I don't know, like midway through the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did, obviously, because we're doing this case. But you wouldn't immediately know that it's about a serial killer when watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the background.
Yeah, it's odd. You don't really know why you're watching all these people. I feel like, right?
Yeah, no, you don't. I'm just like, okay. Like, this isn't adding up, and
it's like these people all seem more or less unrelated. There's like only a couple of like small things that connect them, and then it's like, oh, I guess that's why we've been staring at these people for like an hour and a half. I guess. Yeah. You know, I feel like Claire Denis's work really blossoms from here. She's an incredible director, honestly, and a good writer as well. This is not her best film, and you know, if you want to see what is, in my opinion, her best film, it's not what everyone's going to call her best film, but it's my favorite film of hers, and that's Trouble Every Day. And it's the first film of hers that I've ever saw. And it's a horror film. It's part of the New French Extremity. And I'm going to get into all that in a minute. But yeah, go watch that if you want to. If you want to see something else of hers to give you more perspective.
What's all it right. called?
Trouble Every Day.
Trouble Every Day.
It's on Amazon.
Okay.
It has Vincent Gallo in it.
Ooh.
I know you know who Vincent Gallo is.
Yeah, I forgot about him.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen Brown Bunny. Do you remember what happens in Brown Bunny?
I do not.
Famously, Chloe Sevigny was dating Vincent Gallo at the time. And she gave him head on screen for real.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. What?
Yeah, it's true.
Is it like
not a good movie, but okay. That does happen in it. What were you gonna ask?
I was just gonna say you can see it all or no.
You know what's happening. I'm pretty sure you kind of see some stuff. I don't know how much of his dick you see. Like, I don't know how. I don't remember how hardcore it is, but you see it. Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to get into this. So, I Can't Sleep from 1994. So let's talk more about Claire Denis. She's a French film director and writer. Her feature film was Beau Travail from 1999. Has been called one of the greatest films of the 1990s, like, in the entire world. Other acclaimed works include Trouble Every Day, which I was just talking about, 35 Shots of Rum from 2008, 2009's White Material, and 2018's High Life, which actually starred Robert Pattinson. So her work has dealt with themes of colonial and post-colonial West Africa, as well as issues in modern France, and continues to influence European cinematic identity. I want to talk briefly about Trouble Every Day, like what I was just talking about. So it's her first foray, it's really her only foray into the new French extremism. I feel like I've talked about this trend in French cinema before, but for those who aren't in the know, the new French extremism or extremity can be defined as a term coined by art forum critic James Quant for a collection of transgressive films usually categorized by gore by French directors at the turn of the 21st century. They're very gory, by the way. Anyway, so Trouble Every Day was the first Claire Denis film I ever watched, and it's the second Beatrice Dahl film that Claire Denis does. She's also in this film, Trouble Every Day. I mean, she's in Trouble Every Day and I Can't Sleep. So the film follows an American couple. This is Trouble Every Day, by the way. It follows an American couple on holiday in Paris. But they're not really there for their honeymoon. The husband's up to something. That's really all I can say. It's really great. I like a lot of the new French extremity, but I gotta tell you, it is not for everyone. Some people would call the new French extremism and extremity French torture porn. I don't feel like that's true. It is definitely that violent, but I feel like there's a reason for the violence in a way that there's not a reason for the violence in American torture porn, if that makes sense. I feel like it pushes the plot forward more.
The torture scenes?
Yes.
Is it in this movie that's pretty torturous?
Oh, Trouble Every Day?
Yeah,
there's some scenes, sure. It's, I wouldn't say torturous, it's just deeply gory. They show you lots and lots of gore. Buckets and buckets of gore. And not in a, like, Herschel Gordon Lewis kind of way. Like, far more realistic. It's not buckets of blood that look like paint, like an Italian giallo.
I love that.
Yeah, that's so true, though. If you've ever watched a giallo, the blood all looks like red paint.
Yeah, it's not very...
It's not good.
Real looking.
No, and that's what makes those so easy to watch, too. Like, they don't make you feel squeamish at all. And it's like Technicolor red, too.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you can watch the French films when you get nauseous with me telling you stories, like gross stories.
I didn't say that I don't pause these movies when I watch them.
You have ginger ale and crackers at your side.
Yeah. Sometimes I take like a, what do you call it? Like the motion sickness drug. Sometimes I'll take one of those beforehand.
Dramamine?
Yeah, sometimes I'll take a non-drowsy Dramamine. Yeah. Look, I have...
You're hardcore.
I am hardcore, you know? It does this to me, but I still love it. And it's fine. It's fine. All right, so let's talk about Beatrice Dahl. She plays Mona in the film, which is Terry Polone's character's brother's wife. But I'll get into that. Okay, so working as a model when she was... Beatrice Dahl was working as a model when she met filmmaker Jean-Jacques Binet. Binet cast her in the lead role of the 1986 film 37.2 Degrees Le Matin, later released in the UK and USA as Betty Blue, which received BAFTA and Oscar nominations for Best Foreign Language Film and made Dahl a star. She went on to star in a variety of French films before appearing in A-ha's music video for Move to Memphis. Dude, did you know that the band A-ha is Norwegian?
though.
Yeah. You know the song Take On Me? Take on me.
I knew they weren't English, and they weren't. I didn't know what they were. I knew they weren't English or American.
I had no idea. They're freaking Norwegian.
Yeah, I thought it was Swedish for some reason.
Sorry. In doing research for this, I discovered that Aha is Norwegian.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, in 2001. Dahl appeared in the previously mentioned Trouble Every Day, and then in 2007 started another now classic new French extremity film, Inside. I could literally do a segment called French Cinema with Anastasia.
You should.
I should. Maybe I'll do that. Maybe we'll do mini episodes. I don't know. So... if you want to go watch Inside, make sure to watch the one that actually has Beatrice Dahl in it. Do not watch the remake. It's fucking awful, and there's definitely shit lost in translation there. Inside's great. It's about a woman who's pregnant and is being terrorized by another woman trying to steal the baby out of her.
Oh.
Yeah, it's fucking horrifying.
Mm.
Especially as a woman. I couldn't imagine watching that pregnant.
No.
Like, that sounds like a bad idea. Or maybe a great idea. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it depends.
Yeah. So, Beatrice Dahl has had a really colorful personal life. She's been arrested multiple times for shoplifting, drug possession, and assault.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. While researching a prison film, she met and married Gunal Mezziani, who at the time was serving a 12-year sentence for raping and assaulting his ex-girlfriend. Dahl married him after 24 one-hour visits. That's fucking bananas.
Wow.
Who would do that?
What a crazy lady.
A little special, it sounds like.
Yeah.
She did later say of the marriage that it was a complete disaster. Which I can fucking imagine. Wow. You married someone who raped his ex-girlfriend while he was in jail for doing that. Genius.
Yeah, that's signing up for a disaster.
Yeah, I'll never understand the, like, love and lockup people. Like,
no.
I can't. I don't understand.
Anybody who found love during lockup, please write our email. We want to hear about it.
Explain to us why you fell in love with a criminal.
Mm-hmm. What is so alluring?
Yes. So, Yekaterina Golubeva played Dega, who is the Russian... she's a Russian actress and writer known for I Can't Sleep and Noches Pansavat. She had a nearly lifelong battle with depression and died by suicide in 2011 in Paris.
Hmm.
Bit of a downer. Yeah. So Richard Corsett played Camille, which is the Thierry Poulin character. He's a French actor with honestly not many credits, acting credits. He's known for I Can't Sleep, Nanette et Bonnie, from 1996, and another Denise film, Beau Travail. Also, Alex Descas plays Théo. He's a French star known for Trouble Every Day.
Ooh. Oh.
Yes. Yet another actor to have repeat work with Denis, and for that matter, Dahl. He was also in Jim Jarmusch's Coffee and Cigarettes.
Oh.
As well as 2009's The Limits of Control. Irina Drabina, who plays Minnie Dega's great aunt. She was a Russian ballet dancer who worked at the Opera Russe de Paris, and who later established a school of choreography of her own Russian ballet company. She had a few acting roles and films such as Dead Certain, Return to the Beloved, and All Night, All Cats Are Crazy. She passed away in 1994 at age 86. Lionel Renard played Ninon. He is a French singer. She is a French singer, actress, and AIDS activist. She's had a long, full career from TV to theater to cinema, including a stint singing at the Moulin Rouge, where she met Bob Hope and went on to have a recurring role on the Bob Hope Show.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy, right? All right.
She's lived an interesting life.
Yes. Well, all right, so let's get into this movie. The meat and potatoes of it, if you will. So, the film starts with Dega. She's a woman from Lithuania who immigrates to Paris with little money, hoping to secure herself a job as an actor. On her first day in the city, she's hassled by police before finally arriving at her great aunt's. She begins work as a maid in the hotel of a friend of her great aunt. That's Ninon. As it is, the only work and place to stay that she can find. And it's Ninon basically does this as charity because Minnie basically is like, hey, you know, we're both Lithuanians. We look out for each other. Give my niece a place to stay. She basically bullies her into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So she starts working as a maid there. And at one point, she goes into town by herself, only to narrowly escape from a man with sexual and potential harmful intentions. He, like, keeps hassling her, like, chasing her, and she runs into, I think, a porn theater.
Honestly. Yeah. That's the only part of this movie that I liked.
Yeah.
Because she's like, hey, I'm eating this crepe. And this guy won't leave me alone. And then she just throws the crepe on the ground and runs in an alley. I'm like, you dumbass. Why are you running in a deserted alley? And then she goes into a porn theater and sits down, but makes her way through the crowd first. And, like, all these men are just staring at her.
Yeah.
Like it's a hardcore. Well, it wasn't really hardcore, but there's a porn on the screen.
Okay. Let's get back to it. One second. So, Dega goes into the porn theater, and she sits in between two people who both seem to enjoy the empty seat between them, if you know what I mean. And Dega laughs loudly at an apparently inappropriate time in the film, and it's clear it is nervous laughter as she just made this narrow escape, and they're all fucking staring at her, and it's fucking hysterical.
Yeah.
I think that is my favorite part of the whole film, honestly.
Yeah.
It's a great little scene.
Yeah, you're like, oh, she's going to the theater. Yeah, that'll be good because she'll hide because it's dark in there. And it's like...
it's a porn theater.
Everybody's got their dick out.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, so at the same time all this is going on, Teo is embroiled in a fight with his wife, played by Beatrice L., as he wants to leave for Martinique with their young son, while she wants to remain in Paris. He is infrequently visited by his brother Camille, who is the Thierry Poulenc character. There's one scene that shows Teo working, presumably under the table, by the way the woman who has employed him talks to him. He puts a large bookshelf together, only to have her suggest that he rebuild it on the other side of the room. And he's just completely annoyed, and he gathers his equipment and hands her the bill. And she tries to stiff him by, like, 1,000 francs. I did the math. That's close to 200 American dollars for reference. He eventually leaves with the money. He was presumably not without a hollow threat from his employer about tax dodging because he's in France illegally. Meanwhile, the city is on edge because a series of violent murders that have targeted elderly women living alone. We get a scene of Dega and her aunt watching a self-defense class for middle-aged to elderly women, no doubt because of the serial killings. And at this point, Mona has come back to attempt a reconciliation with Teo, but he still wants to move to Martinique. a place he later describes as paradise. You don't need money or clothes. You barter and live in a banana leaf hut. That's literally what he says, and that is not fucking paradise. Oh, yeah, my God.
And I don't think that's true at all.
No, it's not. It's not true, and that's not paradise. That's abject poverty.
Yeah, and that's you, like, having to find your food every fucking day. Like, yeah, it's not... Find water, running water.
It's irresponsible. It's not salt water. Young child. Yeah,
fucking kid, dude.
Yeah. It'd be one thing if you grew up in a remote village in the fucking Amazon, but you didn't.
Yeah, you grew up in Paris. Very different.
Yeah, or I guess he grew up in Martinique partly, and then partly in Paris.
Yeah.
Because I guess this is his stepbrother. They don't really explain it in the film, but, like, as far as Terry Pullen goes, he only had, like, stepbrothers. So
yeah, or half brothers.
Yeah, so it would have to be something kind of like that. But again, they don't explain that at all in the movie. So whatever, I don't know. Yeah. So the city's on edge. Oh yeah, Mona's come back to attempt to reconcile, and he said all that crazy stuff about living in Martinique. No, that's clearly not for Mona, and she's made that pretty clear. A little later, we see Camille doing drag. I say this with a little question mark because it's... Okay, so there's conflicting reports about whether or not he's transgendered or if he was doing drag or if he ever actually performed on stage. And in the movie, he's in such a weird... It's like he's doing this drag show in the hall. And he doesn't really have makeup on. It's just like he's kind of in a dress.
It's like a wig, right? Doesn't he have a wig on?
I don't think he has a wig on. I think that's just his hair.
Yeah, that's a real song. They just played it. He didn't sing it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, it's not... Okay, my Americanized version of drag that I'm used to is like a level of makeup that looks like... makes you look like an entirely different person.
Yeah.
And he has no makeup on. Or very little makeup on. And he's just kind of in a dress.
I mean, so, he really did drag. There's pictures of the real Thierry.
Oh, I know. But there was, I guess, debate on whether he actually ever got paid for it.
Oh.
Like, whether he worked at that nightclub or not.
Oh, yeah. It says he did later. He was a waiter, and then he came back to Paris, and then he started doing drag shows.
Okay, I knew that he was a waiter there, but I've read different things that said that he was only a waiter there, and that he lied about actually performing there, so I just wasn't really sure.
He probably did it once.
Yeah,
just one time. Yeah.
So this scene's kind of strange. Like I said, it's almost like he's in a hallway. He's only wearing a dress. He has very minimal makeup on. He's like mouthing this song, like lip syncing this song, and there's dudes lined up on either side of the wall, and he just like comes over and sings at them and touches them, and it's odd. It's an odd scene.
It's very French.
It's very French, but it's also very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's very intimate. I don't know. It's a weird scene. Do you agree?
Yeah, I thought it was really weird. And it was random, too.
It's kind of random. I mean, it does show you a little more of his inner life, but I don't know. It's odd. It's odd. And I think it's just her way of character building, but I don't know. Anyway. So, Camille and his lover have been renting a room at the hotel that Dago works at for at least a month or so. At about an hour and 2 minutes into the movie, you discover that Camille and his lover are the killers. Just before a murder scene, the first one we've actually seen in the whole movie, Camille and his lover are arguing. Camille asks him, "Are you afraid of me?" And his lover replies, "I love you," but it's pretty clear that he both loves Camille as well as he fears him. And the fear might be winning over at this point. Eventually, Dega begins to follow Camille around and figures out that he is the murderer after spotting a police sketch of his face. After she breaks into his room and she finds a bag of cash, and she shoves it down her pants, she shoves it in her pockets, she shoves it everywhere she can shove it. I think she shoves it in her bra some. Like, she's just shoving cash all over herself. yeah, she is. And then she leaves and goes back to Lithuania. She's like, I'm out.
Yeah, fuck this place.
Yeah. Camilla is spotted by the police after one of his victims recovers enough to give a description of him. Teo is brought downtown to the police station for questioning, but insists that far from having anything to do with the murders, he remained unaware of what his brother was doing the entire time. And I mean, from what we see of the movie, that seems clear. He's got his own shit going on. He's having this battle with his wife. He doesn't know what the fuck his brother's up to.
Yeah, he's having a little, a hard time coming to reality that he has a child and a wife to care for.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure this just really threw a wrench, like, oh, great. And now my brother's a serial killer. And that's how the movie ends. You see, like, a shot of her driving back to Lithuania, and that's pretty much it. And, I mean, I've given you all the fun, juicy facts that I have, too.
Yeah. I did not like that movie.
It wasn't my favorite that we've done, but
I think you're right about it being pretentious. I mean, that just in my... I'm not a film expert or anything, but it seems pretentious.
I think the word I used was like reverse navel gazing.
Yeah, I was like, what is navel gazing? What are all these gazes?
I'm sorry. I'm a film critic.
Yeah, I didn't study film, so I'm like,
I have an order.
Yeah, I'm Googling like navel gazing. I'm like, what the fuck? I was like, someone's belly button?
It just, you know, means not being able to see the forest for the trees.
Yeah, I was thinking like navel as in like an orange, or navel as in someone's belly button.
Well, I guess it does refer to the belly button in the sense that you're just so stuck up your own ass that you don't see the harm that's going on around you.
Yeah, okay.
Or what the world that's going on around you. Yeah, so this has been Phrases with Anna.
Oh, it's actually in the dictionary.
Yes.
Self-indulgent or excessive contemplation of oneself or a single issue at the expense of a wider view.
Like I said.
Yeah. What? There's also another word for it called omphalokepsis. What?
Well, that one's new to me.
I'm going down a Wikipedia rabbit hole. I'm so sorry. I need to stop. We're in the middle of a podcast.
Please quit that. All right.
I'll stop.
We're going to take a small break, and then Morgan's going to tell us about Thierry Poulon.
Thierry Poulon!
We're so sorry. We love our French audience.
We do too. Yeah, definitely. But we are very sorry for the brutal mispronunciations that are about to happen.
And our bad French accents. We apologize for that too.
Yeah, so sorry.
Aww. Just to make you feel better, guys, I have the artwork of the Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie's movie poster tattooed on my arm. I'm a hardcore lover of French cinema, and I want you to know that. All right. We're going to take a small break, and then, like I said, Morgan's going to tell us about the crimes.
Yeah, go get some chippies. All right, bye.
Can't get enough true crime? I feel like everybody has one of those cases. It may even be what really got me into true crime. Do you love the paranormal?
I guess clearly he's making a list and checking it twice. He's going to find out if your soul tastes nice.
The Come Join Blood, Guts, and Booze. I feel like this case is pretty well known, but a lot of people don't realize just how twisted this case really is. Every Sunday,
they started feeling really bad for her spirit, right? Her little ghosty. So they decided to invite her into their house permanently.
Nope. as we talk about your worst nightmares and things that go bump in the night.
Bonjour, mon amis.
Bonjour.
We're back.
Are you back?
I am back.
You're
back
here.
Back again.
Back in the saddle again.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
That's what I was thinking of.
I do that all the time. That was Henry Zabrowski's mouth guitar sound. The last podcast on the last.
Yes.
I've stolen it from him. I do it all the time in my personal life.
That's funny because I do too.
Yes. Yes. We're the same person.
It's so good. You can't not.
I know. It's perfect. Like, I love them so much. I can't wait to see them in April.
I think Andrew and I were planning a trip to like Costa Rica or something. Cause I gotta get a vacation. But the week that they're coming to Richmond, they're doing 2 nights in Richmond. I think we're gonna be gone.
That's a bummer, dude.
I know. It was like the only time we could get off. So, yeah, I'm kind of bummed.
I'm just throwing this out there. If you want to look at the, off into the future of, say, April-ish.
Ooh.
For a nice trip to Rochester.
Oh, fuck yeah. I could come to Rochester.
Because I'm pretty sure that's where I'm seeing them. I'm thinking Rochester. Let me double check which city I bought tickets for. It was either Buffalo or Rochester.
Yeah, I could totally come. I do have a wedding on the 16th of April, but
I don't remember what day it is. It might even be March.
Well, let me know. I'll
get on the exact dates and we'll go see the last podcast together.
Yeah, fucking love those dudes. I want to meet them.
Me too. And Mark wasn't coming with me.
So. Oh. I'll be your date.
Yes, be my date. Because I, like, deliberately just didn't invite him. I'm like, it's not your thing. I'm not going to drag you to it.
Yeah, I was looking at tickets, and I was looking to buy one. So I don't think Andrew would come either.
Yeah, see? It's perfect. We'll go see him together.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah.
Okay. You guys were just here for us to decide that all together.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into it.
Okay. Just a fair warning. Everybody knows this if you listen to us. We butcher things like pronunciations. Yeah.
You know, we try.
Yeah, we really try. Like I looked up like pronunciations, like because YouTube has like how to pronounce this. So I looked up.
Literally heard her listening to the pronunciation coming back into the room.
I'll probably still ruin it. I was like, I have to listen to it again. So maybe I'll just play the sound bite. So I don't completely butcher it. But yeah, the reason why I know how to pronounce his name is because there is a French designer or something that has the same name or first name. But yeah, so Mugler? We'll get into
Terry Mugler.
Yeah.
Yeah. That angel and alien perfume are both like really good smelling.
Yeah. No, I had never heard of it.
Oh, yeah. My sister wears Angel, like, religiously. She's been wearing it as her signature perfume for, like, 10 years.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, you knew who I was talking about. Wow.
I did. Yes.
I was, like, because they kept talking about aliens on this, because it was some YouTube two guys, like, talking about fashion.
Oh, yeah. My favorite perfume of his is called Alien. And it's got, like, a very, like, patchouli kind of musky chocolatey smell.
Oh man,
I think you'd like it.
I may like that. I'm
a sampler in the mail.
Yeah, there's this this perfume company that I used to buy when I was in like high school, middle school. It's called Demeter. You should look it up.
I used you know? To buy from there. Yes, yes.
Yes.
When I was a teenager, when I still wore makeup, I was obsessed with Sephora and obsessed with fragrances from Sephora. And I had like the whole Demeter library.
Yeah, I had like it was Dirt. I loved Dirt. Oh my God, I love Dirt. It smells so good. Then Honeysuckle.
Oh, that one is good.
So one time I like got into mixing the two because it made this fragrant like dirt smell. And one time I was at a party and I had a bit too much whiskey to drink. That's when I drank whiskey, but I got really sick at the party and this creepo dude came and was like, "Oh, hold your hair back." And I'm like, "Leave me alone." I'm like behind an air conditioning unit with this strange guy holding my hair as I'm like vomiting. And he goes, "You smell so good." And I was just like, "Thanks, go away." It stuck with me. This was like when I was 17. And it's just so weird that I'm vomiting and he's still saying that I smell good. And yeah, I made him go away. I was like, I started like pushing him away. I'm like,
you know what? That's a testament to how good Demeter fragrances smell.
Yeah, it covered up the smell of my retching.
Yeah. Not an advertisement, but you should be.
Yeah, right? Demeter fragrance.
We're both clearly big fans. Anyway, yeah. We've digressed a lot.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
About the killer.
Coming back. All right, coming back around. Okay, so we'll start with the Monster of Montmartre. Did I say that right?
Oui.
Oui. Okay, so he had a few nicknames. Monster of Montmartre. Montmartre. and also the Granny Killer. And there were a few more French names that I did not write down because I knew I'd butcher them. But Thierry Pollon. So Thierry Pollon was born November 28th, 1963 in Fort-de-France in Martinique in the Caribbean. So when he was born, his mom was a teenager and his dad decided to be like, "Hey, I don't want this baby. I'm going to Paris." And he moved to France, abandoning his teenage mom, who quickly gave him up to...
You mean abandoning his teenage baby mama?
Well, the the teenage mama abandoned Thierry after this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So after...
Oh, well, right. He was raised by his grandmother.
Yeah, after the dad stepped out, the mom was like, I can't take care of this baby. Peace. And bye. And then his grandmother raised him. And she owned a restaurant. This was all at Martinique still. Right. But she raised him and had a restaurant. So, like, she probably didn't give him any time. Like, the restaurant business, I was raised in it too. Like, it takes up your life. And other reports are saying that she, like, did not care one bit about him. Like, it was just work.
Yeah.
So around the age of 10, Paulin moved to be with his mom, and she had since remarried and had a new family. So when Paulin moved in, he didn't really get along with his step siblings and half siblings. And it wasn't soon after she wanted him gone, like to move to with his dad in France.
Like, never mind, I'm going to abandon you again.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we tried it out. Not cool. It's not what I had in mind. So, bye.
Bye.
Yeah, so he ended up moving in with his father in France. Him and his father, it doesn't say, like, how they got along, but I'm assuming it was okay. But he didn't get along with any of the students in the school he went to. There were reports that it was a lot of racism, which is understandable in this, like, I guess not, it's not condonable, but back in the 70s in France, like in Paris. So, he didn't get along with any of the students, had no friends, and he didn't like school. So after school, he became a paratrooper. And just like school, he was an outcast, mainly due to his race and also his homosexuality. At this point, this was in the late 70s, early 80s, and homosexuality, like, I guess it's France. I don't know. They're used to being open, but he didn't get along with, like, anybody in the military either. So he left... and around, it was November 14th, 1982, Poulon held up an elderly woman at knife point in a grocery store. He was quickly caught because it was someone that he knew. Like, this just
Why
goes...
Why would you rob someone you know?
Yeah, this goes to show, like, he had no problem just trying to get what he wanted. And
sure.
Yeah, I think it was like him versus the world kind of view. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know him or see any, like, videos of the way he presented himself, but the stuff he says in some of the court testimony is just like, he was just so, not to be goofy, but laissez-faire.
Oui.
Yes, yeah, so he started doing the crimes, and with this woman, she was like, yeah, I know him, it's this guy. So he quickly went to jail, and around June was his trial. They sentenced him to 2 years, but he got out, like, short. So I'm assuming he stayed in jail from November to June, and then right after he was let out of prison. He was supposed to serve 2 years, but all of it was suspended. So I don't know if he was in jail for that whole time. I couldn't find anything on it. And then around this time after he left, he tried to move back in with his mom. Didn't work again. He shortly left after that. And then after this, he became a waiter at Paradis Latin, which is like Latin paradise.
No, Paradis Latin.
Oh, I thought you don't pronounce the S.
I told you, like all languages, there are exceptions.
Oh, okay. So Paradis Latin, or Latin paradise. This was a nightclub in Paris that was, like, known for its drag shows. it was like a gay club. That's when he started supposedly, like Anna said earlier, starting to dress in drag. In one report, I saw that he didn't start doing the drag until after he left his boyfriend. We'll talk about. But a Wikipedia page says his favorite singer was Eartha Kitt. And she is so cool. I fucking love Eartha Kitt. Catwoman.
I was going to say she's my favorite Catwoman.
Yeah, she's my favorite Catwoman. Oh,
eat
God.
Your heart out, Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, fuck you. No, I'm just kidding.
No,
she's
you're
cool
great.
Too. But
and your boobs are magnificent. And Brokeback Mountain.
Mm. I forgot her boobs are in that.
They're great. Yeah. She's got nice boobs.
Yeah, they were her boobs. It wasn't like a standard.
Yeah, they were hers.
Yes. So he was really into the club scene and drug scene in the 80s in Paris. He actually invited his mom to one of the shows. That's what report said. And then she left like immediately.
She was like,
yeah, his family was very not welcoming of his sexuality.
Traditional values.
Yeah. Yeah.
In American terms.
Yeah, even though the dad like walked out of the mom, moved to a different country. But well, yeah, whatever. Yeah. So around this time, it's when he met his boyfriend. I don't want to butcher it, but it's Jean Thierry Matrin. I think that's it. That's what YouTube told me.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think Matrin. So he was also a drug addict. But Matrin was like way more hardcore of a drug addict. He like couldn't keep a job. So Pallon was actually supporting both of them by the waiting job. He also had another job. It was like hooking up photographers. He was like a freelance appointment maker. That's what it seemed like. It was a French article that was translated. So it may be like completely wrong in translation. But he was able to hold down a job. But at this point, they were like having parties. They were, you know, like up in the drug scene, cocaine, drinking champagne. Like that was his favorite drink, was just champagne, like all the time.
Hey, I mean, you can, I don't know about in France, but you can get really cheap champagne here. I've had that $8 Andre.
Oh, yeah. We've all had the $8 Andre is the best.
Right?
Yeah. I don't even know if, I've probably only tried like one legit champagne in my entire life.
Me too. When my sister moved in, Mallory, when she moved into one of her, the house, one of the houses that they moved into or something, left behind in the fridge was a bottle of Cristal. And they, my sister basically gave everyone at her wedding, at the after party, like, or the reception rather, a sip of this Cristal.
Is Cristal champagne?
I think so. Most positive it is.
Then I have had Cristal.
There you go.
I went to a fucking Motel 8 when I was like 16 with a bottle of Cristal from my parents' restaurant. I have pictures of me and my friend Catherine posing with it, like all dressed up, like both holding the bottle together.
That's amazing.
Oh man, I need to find that picture. You can post it. I'll just blur out her face.
That sounds good. Put a smiley face over it.
I'm so proud.
I think we have pictures of my sister chugging the Cristal.
Oh, nice. That's class.
Like in her wedding dress, probably.
Yeah, that shit's expensive and it's not even that good. Like, I'll choose a bottle of Andre over Cristal.
That peach Andre is pretty good.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And making, if you're making mimosas anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Mimosas.
Mimosas. Okay, sorry. We're getting so distracted.
You guys love us, right?
Yeah.
We're gonna get back to it.
I hope you're not turning us off now.
Please don't. Please don't.
Please stay. Okay, so he's clearly into drugs. And like into the party scene. So at this point, he needs more to support himself. And some reports are saying it wasn't even for the money. Which it's clear because he never really got much out of any of these women. I think it's because he hated his grandma. He's like killing these old ladies.
I mean, I'm not a licensed psychologist or anything, but with the psychology of a lot of serial killers, the victims are usually patterned after someone in their life that they're angry at.
Yeah, like that wronged them.
Yeah, like Ted Bundy killed women that looked like his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really think it was not so much the money, but the sadistic part of it. Like, he was a fucking murderer, like serial killer.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't serial kill for, like, $50 and some pearls here and there.
Yeah, no. Like, for real, like, he really didn't make out with anything. Which further, I think, pushed him or gave him an excuse to keep killing.
Sure.
And
you've already done so much at that point.
Yeah, like, his other attacks, so his second and third attack that are known, October 5th, 1984, it was Anna Barbier-Ponsos and Germain Pitouet. They were 83 and 91. He had rushed in their homes and beaten them. Anna died, but then he stole 300 francs from her. And I looked it up with the exchange rate from 1984 France to the U.S. exchange rate. It was $44. That's all he got. And
that is nothing.
Yeah, that's nothing. I don't know how much cocaine went for, but, you know, nowadays that doesn't get you much.
No. By the way, the woman's name is Germaine Petitot.
Oh, it's like a isn't that a play or something? Petitot?
I don't know, maybe.
Anywho, he made out with about $44, maybe even less than that, because the exchange rate fluctuated. But over the next, like, 7 weeks, he just went on this, like, murder rampage, of old women. I think the youngest, hold on, what was the youngest? I think the youngest was, like, 71 is what I got. And his boyfriend, Jean-Thierry Matrin, he was also implicated in, I believe, all of the cases.
All the ones that they were caught.
It was October 5th, 1984, all the way to November 12th, 1984. So they were just, like, beating and strangling. And there was one case where he poured bleach or, like, caustic acid down her, or caustic soda is what they said, down her throat, before robbing her of jewelry and change, probably.
That's a sadistic way to kill someone.
Yeah, that's, like, super fucked up. And that's not, like, hey, I have a drug problem, let me, like, you know. Because that was his defense, was that he was a drug addict and needed money.
No, if you're a drug addict and you need money, you just kill them quickly and get out of there.
Yeah, or you
don't
just
pour caustic soda down their throat.
Yeah, like, that's the sadistic.
That's torture.
Yeah, they did torture a lot of them. So after this, they killed... let me see. I don't want to butcher his name. Thierry was actually known to have killed 21, but with his boyfriend, he was only convicted of 9.
Nine? Right.
Yeah. There's, like, conflicting, like, numbers. There's 20, there's 21, there's 18.
I think 20 is the generally accepted number.
Yeah, because a lot of the stuff is in French, too, that I got, that I was looking at. And I don't think he was actually convicted of 21.
Well, I mean, you'll get to it. He wasn't actually convicted of any of them.
Yeah, yeah. True. Definitely true.
But anyway, continue.
So he, like, his MO was following these women from a store and then, like, pushing his way into the apartment as they unlock their door. And that's, like, a fucking scary way to get caught by someone. Like, you're literally at the door with your keys. Nothing. You have nothing. There's nowhere to run, especially if you're an 81-year-old woman.
That's when I'm most on guard, is when I'm, like, unlocking my car and shit.
Oh, me too. I'm, like, I'm hyper aware.
yeah, me too. I mean, well, with the kind of podcast that we host, how could we not?
Yeah.
And just the lives that we've led. But, yeah, I mean, we're both small women also.
Yeah, very tiny. I mean, you're way small.
Yeah, I'm 4'9".
Yeah, your pocket size.
Yes.
I'm 5'1.5".
We're not small
here.
Women.
They went on with this, but it was mainly 1984. But with Poulon, he went on to December 20th, 1985 through June 14th, 1986. He had attacked and tortured 8 more women. And at this point, France was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, all these elderly women, like, people would try to, like, walk the elderly women home, and they're like, no, get away from me. Because, like, they were the target. So in France, in Paris, they're like, all the old biddies were just scared. And police were investigating. They had like over, I think it was like 160,000 people, that they matched fingerprints, or like got fingerprints from and tried to match it. But, they could not catch this killer, 'cause all they had was fingerprints at this point. Like, there's no DNA testing and stuff.
Yeah.
So they're like going over a quarter of a million fingerprints. So they did know, like, the police knew that the same person had committed them. So they were hoping they could just catch the guy in the act, or like right before the act or something, and then get the fingerprint match. So after this, Poulon was heavy into drugs, and he tried to attack one of his drug dealers with a baseball bat, or somebody. It says drug dealers in a lot of...
You know what that reminds me a lot of? The Party Monster murder?
Oh, man. I forgot about that.
You know, he died recently. Michael Alig, he had been released from prison, and he, like, OD'd, like, I want to say last year.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh like that, but...
I mean, that's not surprising.
Yeah, like, he of definitely course he OD'd. Would fucking OD.
Yeah, like, given the life he led, him ODing is, like, destiny.
God, that movie.
I love that movie.
I do, too. It's so dark. Ugh. I felt bad for Seth Green.
I felt bad for Wilmer Valderrama.
Oh, God. No, that was... Okay, it wasn't Seth Green that was in the angel outfit. That's right.
Seth Green is his, like, roommate, best friend.
Yeah.
Anyway. James St. James.
I have to watch this movie again. Oh, it's so fun.
You do. Okay, anyway.
Yeah. I don't even remember where I was. Oh, so this is like around 1986. Poulon is highly addicted to cocaine. He has like barely any friends left. He's like just partying all the time, drinking champagne. He goes to jail for trying to attack supposedly his drug dealer with a baseball bat. He went to jail for a little over a year, got out. And that's when he realized that he was HIV positive. They had tested him in prison, and then he started showing a little symptoms. So instead of, like, you know, changing his life around after getting out of jail, it was like a madhouse. He went more hardcore with the killings. And I think that's like the only reason why he got caught like he did.
Sure, but I mean, he probably, I don't know, in some regard, maybe we even wanted to. I mean, once you find out, in this period of time, if you found out that you had AIDS and were HIV positive, it was a death sentence.
Oh, definitely. Like, you're dead super quick.
Yeah.
And he had, like, full-blown AIDS at this point, so he was severely sick, like, really sick. So he went on to kill two people in the same day. He beat to death one woman, and then the other one he left for dead after strangling her. But she actually was still alive. So, like, I think it was, he was only like 24 at this point. And
yeah, she like just celebrated his 24th birthday.
Yeah, his 24th birthday. That's right. And he ended up getting, they had like a sketch of it, and they like quickly found him because he's really strange looking, but like cool looking. So it's really easy to pick him out.
Yeah, he's definitely a memorable face.
Like, he did not change his appearance at all. He had like a blonde mohawk, like bleach mohawk, dark, dark skin, and a large circular round earring in his ear. And he wore that all the time. Like, all the pictures, he looks the same.
Yeah, so he's like super recognizable.
Yeah, very recognizable. So he was accused at this point of 18 murders. He claimed responsibility for 21, but I think 20 was the number, like you said. So
it's not widely accepted number.
18 to 21, somewhere around there, that older women that he killed. And in 1988, before his trial, he started getting super sick with AIDS. He got tuberculosis and meningitis. He died of, I believe, like the tuberculosis, I think, killed him. Yeah. But he died April 16th of 1989 before he ever got trial. And Matrine was only tried for the first 9 murders. And he got a life sentence with a conditional release year, because France has a weird, like, conditional release. Like, you can, I guess we have it too, but they call it something really strange.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about, that special term.
Yeah, I can't remember. I didn't write it down. But he ended up
Avexercy.
Yeah, like the translation for it is something semi-liberty regime.
Yeah, something.
Something like that. And a security sentence is what they call it.
Right.
It's like a sentence that they're convicted of the crime, but they can serve out that. So in a safety period, they could be released after 18 years. So he had filed for release in 2008. The first one was denied. And then on January 9th, 2009, after 21 years, he got a semi-liberty release. And that was for a period of 3 years. I'm assuming he was like on conditions, or like had to wear a monitoring or something. I don't know.
Yeah, like being on parole.
Yeah. Well, he didn't go on parole until 2012.
Right. But I mean,
so I don't know what
Polish limbo.
Yeah, they call it a semi-liberty regime in France. So I don't know what the fuck that means.
If you're French and you'd like to explain this to us in terms we might understand better, write in.
Yeah, because he wasn't technically released all the way on parole until January 26, 2012.
Right.
Okay. But what was crazy is that whenever Pelon would be at these parties, he'd be like, okay, I gotta go to the bank. And then he would actually go follow some old biddy and attack her at her doorway. So he would tell people, I'm going to the bank. He'd come back with money. It's just fucked up that he called it going to the bank.
That is fucked up. Like, because to him, it almost wasn't a lie. They were his bank?
Yeah.
That's fucked up. That's
so yeah. He would steal jewelry and so he'd try to like beat them into telling him where their life savings was. And many of them didn't have anything. They're fucking old as shit. All they got is like some costume jewelry.
Well, here's the thing. He wasn't going to like millionaires' homes and robbing like really old women with what's the word I'm looking for? Like generational wealth or something. he's following little ladies with tiny little French apartments who have, like, modest income. Or,
yeah,
like,
I think,
retirement money.
I feel like him murdering them was, you know, his I don't know, pleasure. And then the money was like a...
Money.
Yeah, the money was just like a perk of it.
Yeah, it was a perk. It wasn't the reason he was there. I don't think so.
Yeah, he threw his boyfriend under the bus, like, immediately. Like, right when they caught him. He was like, no, that's not me. And then he was like, my boyfriend did it.
Yeah, and then, like, he knew even...
And they had been split up at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, he knew that he wasn't going to really see any jail time because he was practically dead anyway.
Yeah.
So why not throw your boyfriend under the bus? Try to save your name, right?
Yeah, because they broke up in 1985 after...
They had been split for a while.
Yeah, because they got in a fight at his Pallon's dad's house because Pallon's dad was like, no, I don't want this. This is not okay. And pretty much was like, you're not gay. And then Matrine got mad, and so he left Pallon and went to Paris. And he was actually a stripper for a while.
Oh.
Yeah, he was a stripper in a TV show.
He was a stripper on a TV show?
That's what I found in French Wikipedia land.
That's interesting.
It's a French TV show called It's Even Better the Afternoon. I don't know their real name. Even Better in the Afternoon.
Interesting. Because
it keeps...
It's Even Better in the Afternoon? Is that like alluding to an afternoon delight?
Yeah, I think so.
I love the French.
Yeah.
All right, so Morgan, what have you been up to?
I have been working a lot, but I'm back into crafting. Made some skeleton fairies.
Cute.
Yeah. And I've been watching a lot of, like, random horror. I finally watched Ginger Snaps.
Oh, nice. That's a classic.
Yeah. I think I had seen it before. Pretty sure I saw it.
All right.
Yeah, it was cool. They looked really cool. Like, I like the fashion. Early 2000 fashion.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of those ones that I picked up in Blockbuster as a teenager because I just kept passing by. It was like...
Yeah, it's so funny.
First, because, you know, like, one of my things was, it's about werewolves, but why is it called Ginger Snaps? And then you're like, oh, her name is Ginger, and she snaps.
She fucking snaps.
Clever. Yeah. I see what you did there.
It was pretty great. Yeah, that's about what I'm up to. Still watching there's only strangers in the apartment, whatever.
Oh, yeah, I've heard good things about that. I've not watched it, though.
Yeah, I've been watching that, and What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, the new TV show?
Well, it's not new.
It's like in season 3, but not the movie, the TV
show. Not the movie. I fucking love the movie. The
movie's fantastic.
No, it's the TV show.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, so that's about it.
Okay.
What have you been up to?
Well, Mark and I... popped some popcorn. Not last night. Not last night. The night before last. So Saturday night. We popped some popcorn. And we watched the new Dune movie.
Oh, how was it?
It was good. I liked it.
It wasn't like amazing? Fantastic?
It was great. It was great. It was good. I was going to say right after that, like, Mark went to sleep. And I watched David Lynch's Dune right after that because I wanted to, like, compare because it had been years since I had seen David Lynch's Dune. So I watched both Dunes back to back, essentially.
So which one?
Huh?
Which one do you choose?
Oh, despite the fact that I love David Lynch, the newest one, I think it's closer to the source material for sure, especially with the casting. A lot of the actors really look the way they're described in Frank Herbert's novel, and that's great.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because they were really badly miscast. And, like, there's some baffling casting decisions in David Lynch's adaptation. But this is only the first half. There's going to be a second one. It's not confirmed, but I mean, I think it earned enough money.
They split Dune in half?
You had to. That's a huge book.
Oh, yeah, it is a huge book.
Like, the main villain that's played by Sting in the David Lynch version, he's not even in this movie because in the book, you don't even meet him until, like, page... Oh, well, you meet him here and there, but he doesn't become the confrontation with him doesn't happen until, like, after page 500.
I never finished the book.
You should.
I know. It's really good.
You know what is also great? Henry from last podcast has a deep dive podcast on it.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't want to listen because I didn't finish the book and I haven't seen the movie in forever.
Well, that's a good thing to listen to after you've read the book and, like, watch the movies again.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I'm feeling a little bit like a cougar here because I just really realized this is probably the first movie I've actually watched that has Timothée Chalamet in it. And he's an attractive little moody fellow.
Hold on. What?
He's praise pretty. He's a pretty man. He's a
oh,
pretty,
he's I
He's a pretty
him.
25-year-old.
He... I don't know.
He's like... I don't know. He's got, like, this boyish, moody charm to him.
I like the striped shirt. I Googled him.
Oh, I'm like, what are you talking about, his striped
shirt? The first picture that pops up.
Okay.
That's the only good one I see.
He's got pretty eyes, and I like his hair, is mostly what happens here.
I want his hair.
Like, if you have nice hair and pretty eyes, I'm going to be like, hello.
You could have the junkiest face ever, and you're like, I love it.
I mean, kind of. Like, if you've got pretty eyes and pretty hair, I'm in. But then there's people I'm attracted to. I don't even look at their eyes. Like, I don't know what color eyes David Spade. Oh my god.
Spader.
James Spader. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not real sure what color eyes he has. I think they're blue, but I could be wrong. It's not about that with him. It's the voice and the way his face looks.
that charm.
Yeah, he's very charming. All right. So we're going to be doing a Halloween Gab Fest part 2, our second Halloween Gab Fest, because we needed a break.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that. And then we're going to do some exciting new things in November. So we'll see you guys on the next episode for that.
Woo! Okay. I'm so pumped for our Gab Fest.
Me too.
I'm excited.
Bye.
Bye.